Good afternoon. I'm Allison Bruni, and you're listening to the Health Justice Radio Collective on McMaster's CFMU 93.3. Last week on the Health Justice Radio Collective, we spoke about the recent cuts to the interim federal health funding for refugee health care. Since these cuts took effect in June, community members and healthcare providers nationwide have been expressing concerns about both the short and long-term consequences that will result. This past Saturday, many of these Hamiltonians gathered in Bayfront Park to demonstrate their opposition to the federal government's decision. I spoke with the participants about their ideas, thoughts, and concerns. Stay tuned to hear what they had to say.
Listening to Health Justice Radio Collective on CFMU 93.3.
Here with Jody Pipes, who is a registered nurse at McMaster University, and she's part of the nursing faculty there. She also volunteers at the Refuge Health Center here in Hamilton. So Jody, thanks for being with us and talking with us at this event today.
You're very welcome. It's actually very much a pleasure, and I feel a privilege for me to be here today and to meet with my colleagues and community members alike, all parties, a part of healthcare, interested in standing up to this very important issue today.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So how do you think the event went today, and what were you trying to achieve with this demonstration today?
I've been talking to a lot of colleagues and working on this since June, and I think a lot of the media has been focused on the work of healthcare providers, but other media has said it's a small band of doctors. So I'm happy today that it's also showing the diversity of the healthcare professionals that are meeting on this issue, and certainly the concerned members from the community as well. I think Nikki said it really well today in terms of the people that we are standing here trying to help are our friends, our fellow members in our community, and as a nurse, I strive to see a healthy community.
Mm-hmm. Great. So what kind of people came to this event today? Was it mostly healthcare providers, or can you give us a better idea of who was here?
Yes, there certainly was healthcare providers. So we had representation from nursing, from physicians. We had nursing students, medical students, and we also had concerned community members as well. And a lot of people who came, it was great to see family, to see children involved. Again, I want to emphasize that this is an issue that will affect the health of all Canadians, and we want to really express that healthcare in Canada should be universal. So mm-hmm. It's good to see a meeting of everyone involved.
Mm-hmm. So far, I guess the federal government hasn't really budged on their decisions. Can you see any negotiations being possible? What do you think is going to happen in the near future with this issue?
Well, I think it's certainly an issue that we need to keep in the forefront and keep advocating for the rights of, as I said, for access to all for this healthcare. I think there has been some changes that have been made, but I think the biggest problem right now is that there's a lot of confusion because there has been so many announcements and so many different changes, and so even people who come who may have coverage are presenting to healthcare services and being denied for the fact that they may be a refugee or of unknown status. Mm-hmm. And that's something that certainly is going to affect systems altogether, but it's also certainly going to affect individual people who urgently need that medical care. Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned that you volunteer at the Refuge Health Center. So have you seen any effects from these cuts so far in terms of individual patients being receiving care or having trouble receiving care at other institutions?
Absolutely. Well, I think the best example that I can give, and certainly is very disturbing and heartbreaking to see as a pediatric nurse, is that it was known that there was a patient that had presented to emergency having a seizure because he no longer was able to access his epilepsy medication.
Wow. Was that here in Hamilton that happened?
Yes, it was.
Okay, that's really unfortunate that that sort of thing is happening. So what do you think, you know, these cuts are coming from the federal level. What do you think are the long-term consequences that this might have in terms of funding overall, maybe increased pressure on the province? Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I think any services that are denied in any area, especially if you're looking at delaying services or people delaying their presentation to access health services, you're going to look at a much poorer prognosis across the board. So a classic example is looking at pregnant women who are not able to access antenatal care. We could predict, possibly further presentations along the road, the health of the baby. Does that necessarily mean an ICU, a NICU, neonatal intensive care? You know, I can't make that comment, but again, we know that if the research does show if we're not able to provide those preventative care measures, that it is going to negatively affect the outcome. So I think it's, certainly all services could possibly be affected. We could see increased presentations and wait times at emergency departments. And certainly, as I said, the health of a population that is already for many reasons marginalized could be see even greater marginalization.
Because I guess we would assume that, you know, these people are still needing to receive healthcare in some form or another. So, you know, whether it's the federal government, the provincial government, someone's going to have to take the brunt of this. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's that denial of that, first presentation, that primary health care. So if we take that away, people are only going to present an emergency, which, as we know, means more money in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in terms of your work at the Refuge Center, have you noticed any changes since June? Are the refugees that are coming to receive care there, are they expressing concern at all? What have their experiences been from your perspective?
I think in the examples that I have certainly would be also from colleagues who are working in clinics across the province. As well as across the country. A lot of the examples that I have is from the communication with healthcare providers across the country. And there certainly has been people who have presented or presented late to have healthcare or are being forced to make decisions based on monetary services if they can only, certainly the example that I have was from a clinic in Toronto where a younger couple who were pregnant, who had children, the father was working, two jobs and all the money was going to food and rent and housing and would then need to consider aborting their child, the mother was pregnant, because they didn't feel they could afford the healthcare services necessary to adequately support that pregnancy and that birth.
Wow.
So that's an example from Toronto.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the Refuge Center, will you still be providing all the services that you always did, or are there going to be any changes there?
At this point in time, we're continuing to provide the services that that have been in place. My role has mainly been, again, with pediatrics and immunization, and certainly that will continue, and we hope to be able to accommodate for all our clients that present.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So just to let the public know, if they don't know much about the Refuge Center, I'm wondering, how it's funded. Is it solely based on volunteer hours of healthcare providers?
Absolutely. It's all based on volunteer. So the physicians and nurse practitioners and nurses and many of the staff that work there are all volunteer their time to support the clients and the health needs. Mm.
What a wonderful service you're providing. So thank you so much, Jody. Again, this was Jody Pipes, registered nurse at McMaster University. So we thank you for joining us on the show today, and thank you for your support to this cause. It's really incredible.
You're welcome, and thank you for taking the time to speak with me. I appreciate it.
Next, we have with us Ashley White, who is a current medical student at McMaster University and a former public health professional. So welcome, Ashley, and thanks for talking with us at this event.
No problem. Thank you.
So I'd like to ask you a little bit about, from the perspective of a public health official, what you think the consequences of these cuts will be on the long term.
I think people have done a very good job of articulating the human rights imperative, the moral imperative. But what I am a little bit concerned about is the economic imperative that the citizenship and immigration minister has articulated as the rationale for the cuts actually doesn't hold. So the idea being that if we cut $5 million per year for the next, or $20 million over the next 5 years, if we cut that from the system by not providing preventative and basic care to refugees, to certain classes of refugees, then in the end we save money. And this doesn't actually work because in the end, these are people who will experience adverse outcomes as a result of not receiving the preventative care. The responsibility to pay for those outcomes will fall to the provinces and eventually to the municipalities, which are also suffering in terms of budget cuts. So in the end, the costs will easily cover over $20 million, so we're not going to save any of that money. And you actually are going to impose greater stresses on the systems that the municipalities and the provinces experience. From a federal perspective, in terms of cost savings, they will be dealing with all sorts of different refugee claimant issues, and the money that will have to go to process those issues, such as, you know, closer scrutiny to applications, things like that, it will cost the federal government as well. The provinces are in the position of having to push back against the federal government in a lot of ways, given that we're coming up to negotiating the 2014 health accord, and this I can see really playing into some of the provinces' interest in sort of resisting the federal government's cuts in this regard. And then you also think about what types of economic logic are being used to articulate these cuts, and what would be next. If we're going to use this type of short-term logic, short-term gain for long-term pain logic, what else comes next in our healthcare system? And to what end?
Definitely. So what do you think, I mean, we assume that the federal government conduct these cuts because of, you know, budget difficulties, and they're not able to pay for all the healthcare needs in Canada right now. So what do you think are another alternative that could be addressed instead of these cuts?
Well, if you look at, there are a number of places where our health system is ridiculously inefficient. End-of-life care is something that we're very, very bad at. Making really difficult decisions about how to rescue people from those last 5 years of life. People over 80, when they do encounter the hospitals or when they are admitted, their healthcare needs and the sort of what they cost to the system goes up, largely as a result of not having access to long-term care beds. Mm-hmm. So people who really could probably be managed in a long-term care facility or a home are being managed in the hospital because there aren't enough long-term care beds. So if we were able to deal with our aging baby boomer population and our aging chronic disease population in a more effective way that managed their pharmaceutical needs, that managed their allied care needs, we would find ourselves with lots of extra millions. And that's just within the domain of health. There are a lot of other expenditures this particular government is making in research and development, in particular around energy and in defense, that most Canadians, I think, could easily say aren't wise uses of our taxpayer money. Like the F-19 fighter jets would be a perfect example of allocation of resources maybe not totally in line with what we see to be Canadian values.
Excellent point. I was speaking earlier to some people about the move by Manitoba and their decision to continue providing healthcare to refugees and then billing the federal government for that. So I'm wondering what you think about that and if that would be maybe a possibility from Ontario and how something like that would occur. Would it be a decision by the provincial government?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is exactly the types of resistance that the province knows that it's the province's back is up against the wall. It either resists in this way by actively billing the province and anticipating reimbursements, or later on it resists by breaking. The system just breaks. And I think Manitoba is being very proactive. Manitoba has some really great public programs, like their public auto insurance program, that really tie into the logic of we're all in this together, we pool our risk. The concept of insurance only works if we pool our risk. And so if you put people who come to the country who tend to experience higher burdens of illness, and including mental health issues as a result of conflict and post-traumatic stress disorder, if you pool their risk with the larger population that is typically quite healthy, actually the outcomes are pretty good, and we find ourselves being able to afford that system. So Ontario should absolutely pursue this. In particular, pressure from municipalities like Hamilton and Ottawa, where huge settlements of refugee communities happen, should be leading this charge. Absolutely. We probably are going to be in no position to not bill at some point. One of the things I've been thinking about is that these cuts are predicated on the idea, and some sort of neoliberal capitalism is predicated on the idea that if social services are cut, charity and people's goodwill will come in to cover the deficits. Okay. This is a bit of a false logic. In countries where neoliberalism has really taken hold, such as in the States, this hasn't come to pass. This is not what's happening. So the conservative logic is that, well, we're going to cut them, and then the communities are just going to have to take care of themselves. So by creating free clinics for refugees, we're almost leaving out what the conservatives want to see, despite the fact that this will cause extra stress to clinicians in the area. This will cause additional stress. Additional stress to local health budgets, to provincial health budgets. So, in theory, charitable interest in physician sort of pro bono physician work is taking over at the ground level, but it's not a sustainable way of taking care of people at all.
Yeah. I mean, we do see that a little bit here in Hamilton with the Refuge Center, which is volunteer-based care. But I mean, that's only able to do so much, and you still have so many hundreds and thousands of people who are not able to access that care. So
Hoden Ali, one of the founders of the Refuge Clinic here in Hamilton, I asked her last weekend, I asked her, now that some classes of refugees are not eligible for billing, physicians who volunteer, what they do is, I know you know this, but just for clarity, physicians go volunteer their time and they bill the province. Though they then donate to Refuge the billing that they get from the clinic time, but they have to make sure that they're billing for patients who are eligible for care. And now that huge classes of refugees aren't eligible for care, Refuge will face funding cuts. They won't be able to bill the province, and they're going to have to look at other funding models. But I simply don't see how we can pay for that. Like, municipalities cannot pay for that, and people are they're aid fatigued, they're charity fatigued already. So it's a big challenge.
Definitely many challenges ahead, but it's great that we had so many people out at the event today and saw a lot of support from the community. So thank you for being here, Ashley. Thanks for speaking with us, and thank you. Take care.
Yeah, good luck.
So the next person we're speaking with at the event today is Katie Dorman, and she's a medical student at McMaster University. And welcome, Katie. And who are you representing today at the event?
Hi, thank you for coming. I'm here as one of the organizers with Hamiltonians for Migrant and Refugee Health, an organization in Hamilton that kind of believes in health equity and health as a human right. And we're just here supporting healthcare for migrants and refugees.
Wonderful. So when did this organization start, and how did you initially get involved?
Well, there's been a group of providers in Hamilton far before I joined medical school, who were working in the area of refugee health, and there's a new clinic called Refuge that Nurse Hoden Ali and several providers have been volunteering to run. And I hadn't been as involved in that, but was kind of working on the periphery with some other kind of refugee advocacy and social justice causes. And so we kind of, when the cuts were announced, we came together and we realized we were all kind of opposed to the cuts and fighting for the same thing. So we started this new group, and that's when we kind of formalized our partnership and gave ourselves a name. But it's kind of a group of people who've been operating individually and in other clinical capacities in Hamilton for a while.
Okay. And then with this common cause, that's kind of what you brought you together.
Yeah, it was really the cuts and the need to formally organize and to call for mobilization among Hamilton providers that brought us together, and that's when we gave ourselves a name.
Okay,
great. And is this the first event or demonstration that you've had on this issue, or has there been events in the past?
Well, a lot of the members of the group were at and organized the June 18th protest against refugee health cuts, and that was before the cuts came into place. That was the National Day of Action, and there was, I think, over 14 cities across Canada who had protests of the sort. And so there were a lot of members of our current Hamiltonians for Migrant and Refugee Health who were there at that protest, and some of the providers were even organizers of the event.
Great. So can you speak about the event today a little bit, kind of what happened, who came, and what you were hoping to achieve with the event?
Yeah, so this event, which was Refused to Cooperate, was part of a multi-city kind of campaign, and it's taken place in both Montreal and Toronto.
Okay.
Before this. And what it is people take pictures showing with signs that declare their opposition to the cuts and the fact that they will not cooperate as healthcare providers or allies in the community. And the pictures are uploaded to a website. So it's kind of a social media campaign, which is kind of providing awareness and advocacy and just confirming our intention not to comply with these refugee health cuts. So the people here today, there was medical students, nursing students, nurses, doctors, residents, as well as there was kind of political representation. We had members from the media, and then we had kind of community allies all come by. And so I think it was a success. We got lots of pictures. We got the word out.
Sounds like a good turnout.
Yeah, and we've made connections with people in the community, other organizations in the community, who are going to join us in refusing to cooperate and in opposing these cuts. So it was good.
Great. So what were you hoping to achieve with this? Was it just to kind of spread the word, increase knowledge about it, or are you hoping to get some sort of reaction from the federal government?
Well, the event today was just one in many kind of demonstrations or rallies to show our opposition to the cuts. And our goal was really to, right now, we've been trying to place pressure on the federal government, and with Manitoba recently announcing that their provincial government will cover the cost of health care for refugees, and then they plan to bill the federal government, we're also here to send the message to the provincial government, to McGuinty and to Ontario leaders, that we would like them to follow suit and pick up the bill for refugee health to ensure equal access to health and coverage for all members of our community. And hopefully they'll kind of bill the federal government and help us apply pressure to the federal government. And we also just wanted to raise awareness. There's a lot of misinformation about out there. The government has been very good at confusing administrators and healthcare professionals and leading to a lot of confusion that's caused people to be denied care. So we're just here and we're trying to spread the message and let everyone know what's going on and educate people.
There seem to be a lot of stories in the news these days about people being denied care for kind of illegitimate reasons, like you said, because there was confusion over who should and who shouldn't be receiving care. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
That's right. There are certain groups right now who are not covered for health care in Canada. There's groups who are covered, of migrants who are covered only for urgent and essential care, and then there's other groups who are covered under current government policy, and even those who are supposed to be receiving coverage based on the government, the CIC's policy, have been turned away from clinics, from specialists' appointments, and we've heard number of stories, and there's been people who have become ill and faced poor health outcomes because of both either not being covered for healthcare or being covered but being denied because of administrative confusion.
And you mentioned in Manitoba that they've decided to continue providing care and bill the federal government. Mm-hmm. Do you know if that was initiated by a group like you here today that was kind of rallying and opposing the cuts, and then from that social movement, those changes were made?
You know what? There's been providers across Canada since prior to the cuts taking effect. So since the cuts were announced, there's been healthcare providers, even more involved than myself actually, who've been rallying to show their opposition, to pressure the government to reverse the cuts. And so I'd like to think that has played a role. And it's been great to see healthcare providers mobilizing and working together to send that message. But I'm not really sure about the situation in Manitoba. I don't know what led the government to make the changes, but I'd like to think that the more awareness we raise, the more we spread the message and tell Canadians that health is a human right and that all members of our community should be covered. I'd like to think that kind of influences political decision making.
We'd hope so. Yeah, definitely. So I'm wondering, on a personal level, I'm just wondering how you initially became involved in this issue and what initially got you concerned. Did you have a personal experience working at the Refuge Center, or what got you involved initially?
I can't remember one specific moment. There's a lot of members of our community who I'm friends with or who I've met along the way who have shared stories about being denied healthcare. So that certainly influenced my decision to become involved. But I strongly believe that health is a human right. I entered the Canadian medical system as a student, hoping to work in a country that had universal access to healthcare. And I was very disappointed when I realized that we don't have universal access to healthcare. There are large communities of undocumented persons or persons who face enormous barriers to care who are just virtually not receiving healthcare in Canada. And so I like to advocate from every angle to have that change, because I do believe in universal healthcare, and it's not what I'm seeing in our system.
That's great. I mean, it definitely starts at the grassroots level and with people, students, healthcare providers. That's really where the action needs to come from, I think. So
I hope so. I'm learning along the way, so doing what we can, but yeah. I hope it's effective.
So for any people that are listening to this show and they're wondering how they can get involved in this issue and what they can do on an individual level, do you have any advice for them?
Yes. So we have, the Hamilton Group, Hamiltonians for Migrant and Refugee Health, has a website. People can upload their own pictures and create their own signs at home. You can also write a letter. So you can write a letter to the Minister of Citizenship and Immigration, Jason Kenney. And all these email addresses can be found online, or our local MPs, as well as you can attend community events. Hopefully we'll have a lot more kind of community events to show our opposition, and people can join those as well.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So thank you so much for speaking with us today, and congratulations on the event. It seems like it was a great success. And best of luck with this topic in the future.
Okay. Yeah, thank you so much. We're so glad you could be here.
Thanks.
That's our show for today. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to learn more about this topic, visit hamilton-health.wix.com/migrant-health.